You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
France has long been considered the champion of cheese, but some claim Americans have mounted a serious challenge recently. While the French have their Comté, Saint-Antoine, Boucheron, and Roquefort, here in the United States you can find world-class Chèvre from Connecticut and blue cheese from Pennsylvania. Can they possibly be as good as the French versions? Well, that's what we hope to find out now. And joining me again is Ruth Reichel, editor-in-chief of Gourmet Magazine, as part of her regular visits to this show, along with Anne Saxelby of Saxelby Cheesemongers and Rob Kaufelt from Murray's Cheese. And I'm very pleased to welcome them all to our show. Hello.
Hello.
Hello, Leonard.
Ruth, when we used to say American cheese, people thought of the single-wrap slice or Velveeta cheese. Have things been changing?
Oh, things have changed so enormously, and they are changing so quickly. Year to year, the American cheese production seems to be doubling every year. And the thing that's so interesting is it's sort of like restaurants where the Europeans are very bound by tradition, and Americans are willing to try anything and go anywhere. So we have increasingly interesting cheeses.
Do you think that this is tied in some way to the green market explosion in this country, or is something else going on with cheeses?
I think it's tied to the green market explosion. I think it's tied to the local sustainable movement, and I think it's tied to a new kind of pride in regional American food.
Now, Rob, you've been in the business for a long time selling cheeses from Holland, France, Italy, England. When did you finally start to take notice of American artisanal cheeses?
I think American artisan cheeses really began to hit its critical mass about 10 or 12 years ago when I was first a judge at the American Cheese Society in 1991, which is the convention we all go to.
Is that competition?
Yeah, there's a judging every year, and we had 75 cheeses that year, and I think this year there are 1,200 entries.
And you carry how many at Murray's?
Actually, our largest selection of cheeses is in the American category. We have over 100 cheeses, but many of them are seasonal, so we don't carry all of them all the time.
You said you learned a lot about each country just by the way they arranged the cheeses in their cases at these competitions. What were the differences?
Well, some of the countries tend to be very neat and precise. France is, Switzerland is, whereas Italy is more about abbondanza. We tend to be that way in New York, big piles of things. And so is England as well. We were in a cheese competition, Cheese Olympics in Lyon. We represented the United States. We'd never been invited. That is the United States. This past January, and in a competition for display and identification. And since this was the first entry for the United States, so of course we came in 12th.
But what did you think as an American? Did you think that we did well as far as the quality of the cheeses? You think we were 12th?
No, I don't think so. I think America's come on very, very strong in the last few years. There's no question about it.
Now, Anne, you are a competitor to Rob, but you're also his protege?
Yep, that is correct.
Did you steal any of his secrets when you opened up your own place?
Oh, tons. No, but Rob did help me get started in cheese. I had come to New York to study art at NYU, and by the end of my 4 years there, I decided that the art world wasn't quite so fun, and cheese seemed like it was a lot more fun.
But hadn't you already interned at a cheesemaker in Colchester, Connecticut?
Well, I had approached Mark and Liz at Cato Corner Farm about doing an internship, and they didn't need me until the fall. Mm-hmm. So I figured a good summer school crash course would be to go and work at Murray's and kind of just eat as much cheese as possible before I went to the farm.
And at the farm, what'd you do? You monitored mold? What does that mean? Blue cheese, you have to just watch it carefully, or the mold that forms on the outside of the cheese?
Oh, yeah. No, I helped make cheese. I did a lot of dishwashing, worked in the cave, turning cheeses, washing cheeses. There's just an immense amount of work to be done at all different stages of the cheesemaking process.
And now you have your own store, Saxelby Cheesemongers, at the Essex Market in the Lower East Side.
Mm-hmm.
And you sell only American farmstead cheeses except for one European cheese?
Yes. I do also sell Parmesan. And
why do you make an exception with Parmesan cheese?
To be honest, it's because when I was working in France, I worked at a number of little cheese shops in France also. And without exception, you know, it would be an all-French cheese selection, and then they'd have Gorgonzola and Parmesan. So I figured if the French can do it, then I could get away with it too.
It's because a lot of people think Parmesan is the greatest cheese in the world. What do you think, Ruth?
I am absolutely of that opinion. I could not live without Parmesan. It's useful for everything. I carry it with me when I travel because you can improve any dish in a bad restaurant with a little Parmesan.
Really? You just pull out your Parmesan?
You grate a little Parmesan on top and it tastes better.
It's better than when those guys come around with those huge things and say, some pepper, please. You want any pepper?
Yeah, right. You say, no, but I will have a little Parmesan.
Now, we do have a domestic Parmesan, but why is it so pale compared to the real thing? Is it because of the milk? What do you think, Rob?
Well, they've been making the cheese for 1,000 years. I was reading recently about Venice trading with the Middle East back in the Middle Ages, and they used and the number one item then was Parmesan as a coin of the realm. It's been made forever. There is the terroir from that region, the Parma region, and there's no duplicating that process here, at least not yet.
Louis DiPaolo, one of your competitors, does a little taste test in which he gives you fall Parmesan, winter Parmesan, spring Parmesan, and summer Parmesan. The cheese is made at different times of the year because the cows are eating grass at a different time and their milk comes out differently.
That's right.
It really does taste different.
Absolutely, because what we want, of course, and that's a raw milk cheese, is to taste what the animals are eating and that terroir of the particular thing. In our own shop, we've got three kinds of parm now, a vaca rosa, a red cow parm, and a very small single production parm.
But a red cow? In other words, the cow matters too, the
yes,
kind of milk that the
absolutely.
Cow produces.
Yeah, the kind of animal, the cow, the cheesemaker, and all of it.
Now, Ruth, you also are a cheddar fan, aren't you?
I am a cheddar fan, and I'm waiting for a great American cheddar.
We've been making cheddar probably longer than most other cheeses. In fact, American cheese is a kind of variant on cheddar, isn't it?
Yeah, well, when the first settlers came from England, cheese making was at first a pretty small homesteading kind of enterprise. But as we began to trade with people down in the West Indies, they would run boats down full of cheddar and run them back up full of rum. So cheddar quickly became sort of our most popular and you know, most produced cheese because it traveled well and it was tasty. And through the years, it kind of became bastardized. And we actually had the first cheddar factory here in New York in, I think, the mid-1800s. And that was kind of the beginning of the end.
And are there differences? There's New York cheddar, there's Vermont cheddar, there's Wisconsin cheddar.
Yeah,
are there differences in the style based on, on the terroir again?
The standard is certainly an English farmhouse cheddar, which would traditionally be a raw milk cloth-bound cheddar, a 56-pound wheel. And now in Vermont in particular, we see certain cheesemakers beginning to make these again, or actually for the first time. There was a little bit of experiment about a decade ago that didn't work. They didn't quite get it right. But now we've got a young cheesemaker up in northern Vermont. He's building caves, underground caves, to age cheddar with some help from the Brits and the French. And so I think in the next year or two, we'll see some outstanding raw milk cheddars out of Vermont.
Although the slow food movement recently created a cheddar presidia, claiming that cheddar can be made only in Somerset, England. I guess this is like champagne only coming from the Champagne area of France and bourbon only coming from Kentucky. Do you think that that's reasonable, Anne? Or should we be calling it something else?
Well,
a cheddar-style cheese?
Cheddar, that's a tricky one, because cheddar is also, as well as being a type of cheese, it's also a verb. It's what you do to the curds during the process of cheese making to turn it into cheddar. It's a process of building up acidification and stuff. So maybe similar to what people do with champagne, they say it's made with the champagne method. Maybe we'll have to go to that, say it's made with the cheddar method.
My guests are Anne Saxelby of Saxelby Cheesemongers, Rob Kaufelt from Murray's Cheese. He also has a book called the Murray's Cheese Book, which is a handy book from Broadway. and the editor-in-chief of Gourmet Magazine, Ruth Reichel, who visits us regularly to talk about food. The two of you have brought displays of cheese here. Four cheeses each?
Five.
Are we going to have a kind of a competition, a competition between France and the United States?
I think so. We've got a really nice array of cheeses here. I don't know how to do a cheese tasting on the radio. Perhaps you'll help us.
Well, let's talk a bit about cheeses. Can they be made from the milk of any mammal? We've heard of yak cheeses. We've heard of camel cheeses.
Theoretically, yes. Most of them don't have the proteins and some of the other content that would make a proper cheese, and so often they don't taste very good for when we occasionally get some of these other cheeses. It's still mostly cow, sheep, and goat, and some buffalo, of course.
And should we store them in the refrigerator? Because I've heard mixed reviews on that.
The refrigerators tend to be pretty hostile environments towards cheese, it seems.
And doesn't the heat of the summer also tend to be pretty hostile?
Yeah. They kind of like to be, you know, like wine, kept at about 55 degrees in a nice humid environment. But if you do have to store cheese in your fridge, having the right paper can make a big difference.
So what does that mean? We should put them in some kind of wax paper?
I found that the best for me is to put cheese in wax paper and then with some sort of plastic coating around it, either saran wrap or in a Ziploc bag or something to keep the moisture from escaping.
And can I add that you shouldn't reuse the paper? Mm-hmm. Which is very important.
So each time you cut the cheese, you have to put a new piece of paper around it?
Yes, because you've collected the change in temperature. You don't want to wrap that now damp paper up around the cheese. It's a cent maybe worth of paper or half a cent.
This is one of those tips that I will remember for the rest of my life. I've done the rest of these things, and also I keep them in that special little drawer. I don't know if that really helps, the drawer in the refrigerator, but I didn't know that I should change the paper each time. We have a debate in my house over mold. When the cheese develops mold, some people say throw it out, and I say cut off the mold and the cheese is going to taste better.
Well, mostly on hard cheeses and semi-hard cheeses, the mold is fine. You can trim it off or not. If you do see an English cheddar out on a sideboard in England, it's cool and kind of moist. The cheddar goes right in your mouth. But those molds typically won't harm you. Most people don't like to eat them when you trim them off. On the other hand, if you've got a fresh product, cottage cheese, you don't want to eat that mold.
Yeah, no, that's mold.
It's kind of common sense the way we've all been.
Now, in France, cheese comes often, the soft cheeses, comes really runny. And you don't see that even in some of the better places here in the United States. Do we have different attitudes about when to serve cheeses?
Well, I think so. I think that's part of what we did in our new shop. We felt it was time to really take care of the cheeses properly. And so we built caves in our cellars. And so each of the different types of cheese has its own environment, so that a soft cheese can be served a point or whatever, or we can create some mold or rind on it properly that we want. But this is new for us here in the United States. We're still in our baby step phase, just learning to crawl and walk, and I think you'll see a lot of progress in the next decade or so.
Well, in France, most restaurants offer a cheese course, and people often have cheese instead of dessert. In this country, only some restaurants offer that, usually the more formal French restaurants. But even the most casual restaurants in France will do that. Would you like to see more of them? Well, obviously, you people would. But I think that it would take a certain amount of educating Americans to get to that point, don't you, Ruth?
Well, and it takes a certain amount of educating to say, you know, there are some cheeses you eat with a spoon. Part of it is getting to the point where we have affineurs who are holding the cheeses until they're exactly right, which is a different thing than making cheese. There's this whole other art. And in France, you will find people who have, three and four cave at different levels, different temperatures. And a big part of it is, once you've had cheese that is at the moment that it should, absolutely ripe and perfect, you never want it when it's not that way again.
Absolutely. Yeah.
My guests are Ruth Reichel, editor-in-chief of Gourmet Magazine, Rob Kaufeld from Murray's Cheese, and Anne Saxelby of Saxelby Cheesemongers. And we will continue our conversation. We're going to taste some of these cheeses, I hope, after this. We're back with our discussion about cheeses with Anne Saxelby of Saxelby Cheesemongers, which is in the Essex Street Market, and Rob Kaufeld from Murray's Cheese, downtown New York, and Ruth Reichel from Gourmet Magazine. Where do we locate Gourmet Magazine? The Condé Nast Building?
Yeah, in yes, Times Square, part of Times Square.
And we are talking about a wide range of cheeses. Now, cheeses, you said earlier, cow, sheep, goat, generally. A listener says that she's allergic to cow's milk, and she has raw goat's milk, cheddar. She says it's delicious. So you can make different style cheeses with different milks?
Sure. I mean, each of these cheeses is really a recipe. Like Annie said before, cheddaring is a process. And so theoretically, you can make many different things than have been produced. And I think that's one of the things that's going on in the United States right now.
One of the things that's constant is that you use rennet with the various milks? What creates cheese?
Rennet is traditionally added to a vat of milk to, you know, for the milk to curdle into curds and whey. But
where does rennet come from?
Stomach lining of a young animal. But more and more people are vegetarians, and you see vegetarian rennet or some sort of or other thing
and
that's not animal.
There are different traditions, too, of vegetable rennets being used. For instance, in Portugal, a lot of their cheeses were made using rennet from thistles. Mm. And other things like vinegar and lemon are also coagulants that are used in fresher cheeses.
And does it matter? How does it affect the taste?
It affects the taste. It also affects the structure of the curd when you're making the cheese. A lot of cheesemakers prefer the traditional animal rennet because they insist that the curd is sort of more supple and more the texture and consistency that they like it.
Now, I have a whole bunch of cheeses here. They're all jumbled together. I guess I have 12 cheeses here and some grapes. The grapes are important because they are meant...
Those are meant to cleanse your palate.
Uh-huh. So where should I start? Do we start... I wouldn't know what
to do. Well, we were going to start with goat cheese. Typically, we might start a cheese plate with goat cheese. In this case, it would be the ash-colored cheese, is the French one, and the this one here.
With the sort of velvety rind is the American one.
Okay, so farm kind of gray.
So I've gone to a restaurant that has a cheese plate, and mm-hmm. they put four or five cheeses on a plate. How do I know which one I start with? Do you start with the milder tasting one, or do you start with the softer one? You said, Rob, that we'd start with a goat cheese. Is that because it's the softest one?
It typically might be soft. Certainly fresh goat cheese would tend to be milder, and like a wine tasting or anything else, you want to start with a milder flavor and work your way up to more assertive flavors near the end.
Mm-hmm. So we'd start with the goat cheese. Now, goat cheeses can be very assertive, too, can't they?
Yes, if they're aged, they tend to be more assertive. And I think we'll find, perhaps, that in this case, the Twig Farm would be a little more assertive than the Valençay.
Yeah, I chose to bring a goat cheese that was ripened a bit longer. I brought some square cheese from Twig Farm in Vermont that's ripened for between 2 and 3 months. And so that has a more semi-firm texture, almost... you know, what people would expect from a Pyrenees-style cheese coming from France or Spain. And I think it's an interesting one to sort of posit against the fresh goat cheese, because when most people think of goat cheese, they think of these fresh, tangy cheeses.
Although if you go to Provence sometimes, they serve goat cheeses in, I guess, grape leaves or whatever that are almost purple in color, and they, I think, are pretty old, aren't they? They've been sitting around for a long time.
Yeah, goat cheeses age very well. We can leave them in the cave for quite a long time. They won't really go off, if you will. But and again, as things age, they tend to become stronger in flavor. The moisture evaporates. They tend to get a little saltier because the salt content is left behind. And, of course, you could theoretically age a goat cheese, you know, to be as hard as rock and grate it on your vegetables or pasta like we do in Parmesan or Romano. But typically that's not done.
So I had This is what? This is a French goat cheese?
That's a French Valence from the Loire region. Loire,
mild and nice.
Mild and nice, coated in ash, aged maybe 2 weeks.
Now, why would it be coated in ash?
Well, that's traditional. Many of the Loire Valley cheeses, Seltzer, Cher, and others are coated in ash. Originally, it would be to protect the cheese. It would have kept flies and various other things off, keep it also a little more moist. But now, of course, that's a traditional AOC thing to do. It must be that particular way, you know, where it's not a cheese with an official stamp of approval.
Well, if we were engaged in a contest, the equivalent of a wine tasting, then what would the standards be if we were to eat this French goat cheese and then the American goat cheese? What would we be looking for?
Well, I think you would be looking for, and I guess you'd be looking for different things in each of the cheeses because they are different ages. I guess it would be equivalent of, you know, tasting wines of, you know, different vintages or coming from different regions. But the fresh goat cheese is usually marked by just a nice sort of tangy, acidic character, but with a very clean taste. And the aged goat cheese is going to taste a little bit more like a cellar, maybe with more sort of intense, I don't know, flowery and grassy notes because it's been aged, you know, and concentrated a bit longer.
I mean, I would almost say that the difference is that the fresh cheese tastes like spring and grass and, you know, pretty little yellow flowers, whereas the aged one tastes like autumn. I mean, it has that sort of deep in the woods musty. They're both lovely, but they're completely different.
Now, I've read your restaurant reviews and I've read your memoirs, but I didn't know you also are a poet, Ruth.
Well,
that was rather poetic. Yeah. maybe that is one of the problems in describing tastes, isn't it? That sometimes you have to come up with words are more evocative than actually 100% descriptive.
There's no question about that. There's no real standard of language for cheese yet. The most difficult part of the book, writing the book, of course, was the fact that it's describing 300 cheeses without saying fresh or salty or tangy or assertive 300 times.
Welcome to the world of restaurant criticism.
Not easy.
My guests are Rob Kaufelt, who has written the Murray's Cheese Handbook, and of course he's at Murray's, one of New York's top cheesemongers, and Anne Saxelby of Saxelby Cheesemongers. Ruth Reichel is also here, the editor-in-chief of Gourmet Magazine, and we're talking about the differences between American cheeses and French cheeses, if there are differences. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. If you were blindfolded, I'll ask you, Anne. If you were blindfolded, would you know, do you think you could spot, oh, this is the French and this is the American? Because it's really become very difficult in wine tastings. People have been fooled many times.
Well, yeah, I guess it depends on where the cheeses were coming from, I guess. At the car, I sort of have the deck stacked in my favor because I carry a small amount of cheeses, and I would be like, aha, I know that cheese very well. But I think you're right. I think that it's increasingly difficult to tell the difference between French and American, and people are making such elegant cheeses here in the States that it would be very hard for people to judge. In fact, I have French people come to my shop all the time, and they look at the display, and they just assume that they're French. And then I say, oh, no, yeah, that, you know, they're all American, and they kind of recoil. And they're like, what? That's impossible. And then when they taste it, they're very much surprised at the similarities between their traditional cheeses and our American cheeses.
And yet we came in 12th.
Yeah, well, of course, we have a new government in France and a new one coming up here, so I think things will improve.
What are you trying to say, that Sarkozy will be kinder to American cheeses, or that when George Bush is no longer president, American cheeses will be respected a bit more?
That's what we're hoping for, exactly.
Oh, because there is a political side, you're suggesting.
Yes, that's what I mean. There's no question about that.
Now, a couple of these cheeses are raw milk cheeses, and I don't want to spend a lot of time on that debate, but can you explain what the problem is with raw milk cheeses? I'll begin with you, Ruth. Since you are the one who's not selling cheese.
Well, I mean, You mean the problem with the government?
That some people have. Why have governments gotten involved in the whole matter of whether cheeses are made with raw milk or whether they're pasteurized?
Well, there's the whole matter of safety. And the great scandal now really is that the French, who have been making raw milk cheeses for centuries and centuries and centuries, are now starting to think about making pasteurized milk cheeses in place of camemberts and so forth. And it's the minute you're heating, what pasteurization does is you boil the milk essentially. And it takes away all of the characteristics that you're looking for, where you're trying to taste what the animals were eating. All that terroir disappears as soon as you heat the milk. And
it kills bacteria as well, but I assume there's good bacteria and bad bacteria. Mm-hmm. And some of that bad bacteria, the good bacteria would affect the flavor, wouldn't it, Rob? So can you tell the difference immediately if you've eating a camembert that has been made with even slightly pasteurized milk?
Well, it's getting harder because they're getting more sophisticated. I would have definitely said yes a couple of years ago, and there's no question that the technology has improved. But that doesn't say anything good about where the direction's headed. France is trying to build an industry at the, and maybe sacrificing, what made some of these cheeses great in order to open up markets that they didn't have before. And then, of course, the American market just continues to grow and get better and better cheeses. But I don't think there's any question that if you had both of them side by side, you do not need an educated palate to tell the difference. The raw milk version would be clearly superior. You can taste it. It's mostly a question of complexity, I think.
But as I understand it, raw milk cheeses have not killed anybody in many years. They seem to be okay. What's the problem that people have with camembert, for example?
Well, I think a lot of it is this sort of false notion of, what is good food, what is real food, and what is safe food. And originally pasteurization might have been necessary because we didn't have good milk. Listeria or even tuberculosis might have been an issue, 100 years ago. With good dairy practices, that is no longer an issue. Nevertheless, the governments, the way they've developed, want to, quote, protect us. And so there's no problem for us to have a single slice of, yellow American cheese wrapped in plastic, even though it's primarily water, potato starch, casein, which is almost 100% imported from China right now. So we don't even know what's in it, and lots of sodium and so forth. So the whole notion of what's safe and what's good to eat and what's not has become distorted.
And then there's the whole matter of people who are overweight. We have a listener who says he's looking for a decent low-fat cheese. Are there good cheeses that are also low-fat?
I always counsel people when they come to my shop that low-fat cheeses aren't real cheeses, unfortunately. There is a tradition of making some cheeses with skim milk. For example, Parmesan is made from skim milk, although it's been aged for 2 years and concentrated, so that's not exactly low fat. But I counsel people to get fresher cheeses that are higher in moisture, like a fresh mozzarella or a fresh Chèvre, something like that that is going to, have a bit more of a water content as opposed to sort of a dense fat content.
We have a comment from a French listener. Actually, he says, I'm a French listener living in Versailles. So he's listening through the internet. I just wanted to say that I've always liked the way you Americans would eat cheese. That is, not often during meals. It always seemed to me like a very free and agreeable way to eat cheese. So he says he likes the idea that we just sometimes sit down and have cheese. You have a party and there's this little display of cheese. Did the French do that?
Well, I think originally, when we were happy to see that the cheese board was becoming ubiquitous in fine restaurants, and that was good, as you say, for all of us that sell cheese. But I think now it's, I'm not so fussy myself. I'm very happy to see somebody have cheese first. We all grew up where a cheese board might go out first. I would just caution you to not put out very strong and assertive cheeses before you're going to eat your main course, maybe some mild goat cheese and some other soft, creamy things. And but yeah, sure, cheese is a perfect snack. It's a complete food and doesn't need, you don't need to do anything.
Most people put out brie, usually the cheap stuff that they find in the supermarket, and it has no flavor. But a good brie can be a good cheese. I mean, but this listener, another listener asked, can I ask the experts why cheese is so expensive? And what's the most cost-effective way to buy cheese?
I was going to say American cheeses. I get this question a lot because American cheeses are quite expensive and many times more so than their European counterparts. And for the most part, the answer is that the production is so small and these farmers are doing everything from raising the animals to milking the animals to making the cheese to packing it up in boxes where at most times it's, you know, the final step in the process is that FedEx goes and picks it up and ships it to wherever it's going. So I think that as American cheese in particular, as the sort of farms continue to grow, we're going to reach a size that's a bit more efficient. But I always tell people as well, you don't need a whole lot of cheese to make a nice little meal. And so if you can get a nice sort of $4, $5 slice of cheese, it's enough. And it's also going to be better because it's not going to be languishing in your refrigerator. You're going to enjoy it that day, and then you can come back and try something different.
And I'm assuming that both of you are quite happy if someone comes into your shops and says, give me a teeny slice instead of insisting on a half a pound?
We have no minimums at Murray's. You can taste whatever you want and buy whatever quantity you wish.
Ruth?
I was just going to say, to anybody who asks me why cheese is so expensive, I say, make some homemade ricotta and see how much milk it takes to make a little cup of ricotta, and you instantly understand that what you're getting is a very concentrated food. And, you know, you don't think about a little bit of cheese starting from this enormous amount of milk, but it does.
Well, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, yeah, I think the math equation is 10 pounds of milk to 1 pound of cheese.
Wow.
So it's quite concentrated.
I also think we have a distorted notion of what's expensive in our food supply anymore. I mean, it's true that these small farms are not subsidized like soy or corn might be in industrial production and all the rest. Therefore, you know, we have something that is what it is. But we've heard it about olive oil and we've heard it about balsamic vinegar. And I think if we want real food and if we want good food, if we want healthy food, then we might have to go back and pay a little more than we've gotten used to, and that may be the best money we can spend.
I want to thank you all for being with us. I've tasted most of these cheeses, and to be honest, they all taste great. I can't tell the difference between an American cheese and a French cheese other than, well, at least in this case, maybe it was fixed. We have some pretty terrific cheeses here. My guests have been Rob Kaufelt of Murray's Cheese. There's also the Murray's Cheese Handbook. And Saxelby of Saxelby Cheesemongers, and Ruth Reichel, editor-in-chief of Gourmet Magazine. And Ruth will be back with us on September 25th. I look forward to seeing you then.
Have a good rest of the summer.
Thank you all so much for being
with us.
Thank
you, Leonard.
Thank you.